Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you've found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Good evening. Welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Well, the Raiders are moving forward. They're moving to kind of change some of the, I guess, mistakes, even though some of them are self-injurious. But today, they signed Colton Miller to a three-year extension worth roughly $18 million a year. It includes $42.6 million guaranteed and goes through 2025, including a fifth-year option. To discuss all of this, he breaks down tape like few others, our guy Ryan Holmes. Good evening, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Ryan, when you heard of the deal, what was the first thing that crossed your mind?
I thought it was a little early, considering they still have 1 year and they could have picked up a fifth-year option on him, so they still would have him under contract for two. But looking at the contract, it's a three-year extension after that, so it basically puts him under contract for five more seasons. At first glance, the 18 annual average seemed a little high, but it's fifth in the NFL right now for left tackles. I don't think Colton Miller's a top five left tackle right now, but, you know, he's somewhere around 8 to 10. Like, he's in the top third of the league. And, you know, 2 years from now, when he would have hit the market, he probably would have been looking at more than that. So the Raiders might be getting a deal here in the long run, and especially with the cap going up with a new TV deal. Left tackles that are good pass blockers don't really hit the market, so I'm okay at $18 million on this deal for Colton Miller. He's an ascending player. He's gotten better every year. He does need to clean up some technique stuff in the run game. He should be a better run blocker than he is, but we'll let Tom Cable and the offensive coaches see if they can pull more out of him moving forward doing that.
I'm going to have a little mea culpa here with Colton Miller. I remember before the draft watching UCLA and Memphis. Memphis had an edge rusher named Jernard Avery, played with the Browns. Think he's in Philadelphia now. Gave Colton Miller the blues. Gave him the business. Just beat him from pillar to post on every conceivable move. Colton Miller looked lost. Then when Derwin James was there, I had the hopes of the Raiders drafting him. And then when the Raiders drafted Colton Miller, you could feel the disappointment. You can feel it. And it wasn't quite the Cleveland Farrell disappointment, but as a fan base, you could feel the people upset. You could feel that air just leave the collective soul of fans. And his first year, he struggled. I remember that game in London when they faced the Seahawks and Frank Clark embarrassed him. But, this is where the but comes in. He took those lessons and he improved. He improved greatly. He looked so much more confident, and he plays with that extra bit of pep in his step. When I saw the numbers, I was like, at first I kind of winced, but to your point, it makes sense. And I'm not used to the Raiders making a fairly smart deal. Now, I want to say that Darren McFadden was the last first rounder to receive a second contract. I could be wrong.
No, that's fact. He was the last one.
But I kind of like this deal. I kind of like the fact that Colton Miller, honestly, it's just on a story level. It makes a damn good story. Like, nobody wanted this guy on this team. No one. Any Raider fan that tells you that they wanted Colton Miller, it will lie to your face. They didn't want him, but he ignored it and he improved. And I actually feel rather confident in Derek Carr's blind side. I don't feel confident in Derek Carr, but at least his blind side I feel confident in.
Yeah, if you go back to the draft, I was going to jump in real quick. If you go back, when Colton Miller was taken, no one had him in the top 15. No pundits, no experts. He was kind of a late first round, early second round guy, but when it came down to the physical traits that you look for in a tackle, he had it. He ran sub 5 in the 40. He was somewhere around like 4'8", 4'9". He was 6'5", 6'6", 300 pounds. Weight, functional strength was an issue. So getting him to put 20 pounds on in between his first and second year has helped his play strength. And the biggest issue, he had a false step with his left foot. So when he went to pass set, he would take like a short drop with his left foot before he really got into his jump set, which would allow the speed rushers to get the corner on him. And then he wasn't strong enough to hold up against bull rushers. And then the fact he had an MCL sprain, he got hurt in the third game of that year against Cleveland. And I think it was a grade 2 MCL sprain, and he didn't miss a game. He played the whole season on one leg after Donald Penn went down. And a lot of Raider fans, I think, didn't like the pick because Donald Penn had a really good year the year before. John Gruden comes in, they're like, oh, Donald Penn's the left tackle. He played for him in Tampa. And the next thing you know, here comes Colton Miller when every Raider fan wanted Derwin James, to your point.
It's a profile in encourage for him. Like, the man endured. I mean, any player that tells you they don't read social media is lying, because chances are the average player has a burner or they have friends or family who read it for him. He had to read the voluminous tweets, articles, comments. He didn't care, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that for the next 5 years, whoever the quarterback is going to be okay. Now, there was an article in the Athletic, and Tom Cable was praising Brendan Parker, and from what people have said and from what excerpts I've read, it seems like he has confidence in Brendan Parker. Talk people off the ledge to think that Brendan Parker is going to be the starting right tackle.
I can't do that because I'm on the ledge too. Brendan Parker last year, when he had to sub in on the left side behind Miller, when Miller missed a game or two, looked much better than he's ever looked on the right side. On the right side, he still has a lot of issues with his footwork, his play strength. He's got length to his arms, but he doesn't quite use that length and get the right leverage, so he can give up the corner pretty good. He was actually okay in a run blocking, but if you have to roll Brendan Parker out for 17 games next year, I think the right side of that line is going to be an issue, because I have a sneaky suspicion that your starting right guard is John Simpson, and Denzel Good will be battling it out with Incognito on the left side, and will probably end up in that swing role where he can back up left guard, and right tackle. I from reading that article and just some of the tea leaves from Vic Taffer in the last couple of days, I think they're planning on Simpson starting, so I don't think you can run out Simpson and Parker on the right side of this line.
I just we talked about Tevin Jenkins. We talked about other, like, there's no way. There's no way that they're going to ignore a right tackle in the first round, do you think?
Unless Cable's got his eye on a guy in the second round, but I have to think that one of those top two picks will be a right tackle. Unless a veteran gets released and falls right into their laps in the next 3 weeks, I would bet in Vegas one of those two picks is a right tackle. I'm not even comfortable with Brandon Parker as the swing tackle. I think they need to upgrade that position too.
We had to let our thought of Azeez Ojulari go. We had to, and I had to let the thought of Trayvon Mooring go. The way this is set up, does this sort of feel a little bit like the Raiders will trade down, or do you think they'll stay at 17?
This is interesting because I think if that first pick is a right tackle, I think they stay at 17 and they have their eye on Darashaw, which Tom Cable was at the Virginia Tech Pro Day. Or, you know, I wouldn't call it a reach, but Tevin Jenkins in 17 is probably the high point where he's going to come off the board. If they trade down, I think they have an eye on one of those free safeties, whether that's Richie Grant or Trayvon Mooring, and they're going to try to get more picks, and they know that they can get a guy at 48 that can step in and start at right tackle. So if it's a trade down, my feeling is it's because they're going to take the safety first.
Now, when we come back from break, I want to discuss the other side of the line with Rod Marinelli. I wrote an article today about how I think that Rod Marinelli should be on the hot seat. He's not, but he should be. You are listening to the FPC, Full Press Raiders coverage, the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. My name is Biggs Ryan Holmes. Ryan, as I mentioned before the break, we had an article today that discussed Rod Marinelli and called into question so many things. Like, I still don't understand how they let Brinson Buckner go. I know that Rod Marinelli worked with John Gruden in Tampa, but Buckner just, the line with less talent seemed like it played better. Am I wrong in that assessment, or do you see a deeper meaning behind Marinelli's presence?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think seeing what Buckner was able to get out of this line, I think it was 32 sacks as a defense that year, and how they regressed, which what was supposed to be better talent when they added Collins, another year with Farrell, a second year with Crosby, you know, bringing in David Irving for a couple of games and just, you know, trying Vic Beasley and just trying to upgrade whenever they could. Yeah, I would think that he is on the hot seat. They've spent a considerable amount of money on that front line. If Quentin Jefferson comes in and doesn't improve, if Solomon Thomas comes in and plays like he did in San Francisco, if they spend a high draft pick there, if Ngakoue comes in and he's a 5 or 6 sack guy instead of a 10 sack guy, the next guy to go besides Mayock, I think, would be Marinelli. And I know Gruden, it would be tough for him to do that, but they've spent way too many top draft picks and way too much free agent money on this line, and now Carl Nassib's coming back too. This defense has to get into the low to mid-30s, somewhere in the 32 to 35. I don't think there's enough talent to start saying, hey, they're going to get 40 sacks, but you know, somewhere north of 30. If they don't, if they end up, you know, low 20s or high teens again, Marinelli's in trouble.
I look at the talent, and I know I look at a guy like David Irving. David Irving was a Marinelli pupil in Dallas, and you kind of ask about Mariner League pupils, be it, you know, Malik Collins and that disastrous one-year deal that was an abject failure, but they have on paper, and we know that the Raiders, their paper plans rarely seem to come to fruition, but Solomon Thomas, David Irving, do you think that they will force Mo Hurst out?
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit last week. I touched on this. At this point, I think Mo Hurst is in an uphill battle to make this roster because I think Jefferson, Hankins, and Thomas are locks. And I think Irving might be a lock. He's close. He's going to be battling with Hurst. If they draft a guy, if they take a guy in the top three or four rounds, he's going to be a lock on the interior. You can't carry five or six defensive tackles. So I think you're looking at carrying maybe 8 to 9 defensive linemen, and you could probably already put 6 or 7 of those guys in. So there's a bunch of guys fighting for 2 or 3 spots. You could throw Kendall Vickers in there too. He's a younger guy that is more of a body type of what Gus Bradley's looking for. They brought in Darius Philbin, who played for Gus Bradley. So they're adding guys left and right to that defensive line, which to me means they're not – I don't think they're expecting Mel Hurst to make this roster, or else why keep bringing in defensive linemen?
And I mentioned Carl Nassib. They can't cut him. His cap hit before this season is too high. And his deal literally hamstrings the defense because you got to play him. You can't pull the Paul Gunther, you know, have him vacation for 2 weeks. They have to play him. What do you think that Marinelli can show Nassib or teach Nassib differently than what he has tried to do in Vegas before?
So this is a tough one. Nassib really only has one move. He's kind of that club rip guy who's trying to get the outside shoulder of the tackle. He doesn't really have any interior moves. He doesn't have a lot of counter moves. If he beats you with his one move, he can get to the quarterback. I think his snaps are going to get reduced. And I want to say when he restructured his contract, there's a good chance up top of my head that he'll have dev money in 2022. So I think he's going to be on this roster for at least 2 more seasons, unless the cap really goes up and they want to eat a little bit of money next year. But he's probably that fourth rusher at this point. I don't think he, unless they want to try him at Sam linebacker in base, which he played a little bit of stand-up linebacker in Tampa in a 3-4, and kind of just use him as that fifth guy in the end of line of scrimmage. I don't want him in coverage. I don't want him running down the field with tight ends, but if you're playing a zone coverage, trying to use him as that fifth guy or Sam linebacker on early downs to set the edge, I can see him having a role there. But you can't play man coverage if you have him on the field as a Sam linebacker. But they're going to have to find a role for him. Right now, I think the edge rushers, you're going to have Farrell, Crosby, and Ngakoue. I still think they might draft a rookie. And then you could even have David Irving fighting Nassib for some snaps outside. And we haven't even mentioned Arden Key, who I don't think is going to be on this roster either.
Now, you mentioned Cleveland Farrell, and this is a guy that we have lamented the fact that he's on this roster. And unlike Nassib, where Nassib's more of a money drain, Farrell is more of a, it would be embarrassing to cut the fourth pick in the draft. Like, I can't read Gus Bradley's mind, I can't read John Gruden's mind, but you got to know that they know that this guy is not it.
It's tough. He's going to fit this defense for what they're looking for in that strong side defensive end that's going to play the five technique. He's built perfectly for that. The problem is when you take a guy in the top five, the expectations are you're going to get 10-plus sacks. He's going to be a difference maker rushing the passer, which is how you affect offenses in the National Football League. You don't really affect the offense by stopping the run. But he's going to hold up well, I think, in the run game. And if he can get you 6 or 7 sacks, that's kind of going to be his ceiling. I don't think he's ever going to be an 8 to 10, consistent 8 to 10 sack guy. He might do it 1 year in his career, but he just doesn't have the speed or the bend to get the corner to do that. And moving over to the right side, he's more of a power rusher, so it's going to be a little bit harder going against right tackles for him. But he should be in a lot of one-on-one situations. If they can get any push on the interior, if Jefferson can do anything, if Crosby or Ngakoue on the other end drawing an extra blocker, but It's tough. The only way I see him on this roster after his contract is if he takes, you know, a market deal for what it is for a run-stuffing base 4-3 defensive end, which is probably somewhere in the $5-7 million a year. He's not going to get anything close to what that fifth-year option is for a defensive end, which is going to be somewhere in the, I think this year it was $17 million. He's not worth anything close to that.
It's odd. I was talking to a friend about the line itself, and there's like you said, there's optimism, but one of the guys I do want to see how they perform is Quentin Jefferson. He's shown flashes in two different spots, and this is more of a hope it pans out. And to say what Solomon Thomas, like, San Francisco drafted him that high for a reason. Now it's time for him to actually show it. Which of those two do you think will show you more this season, Jefferson or Thomas?
I think this is an easy answer. It's Jefferson. He's a better football player. He's better for this defense. He's probably 10 or 15 pounds heavier than Solomon Thomas. And he's gonna be able to hold up in the run game. He can take on double teams, and there's enough there interior wise with moves to where he can get to the quarterback. Solomon Thomas is an interesting player. He played inside at Stanford, and he put up monster numbers. He tested really well. He ran in the 4.6s or 4.7s as a defensive lineman. He was a guy that San Francisco was gonna move around a lot, but then he got in the numbers game because they had Eric Armstead, Forrest Buckner. They had guys interior, so they had to move him outside where he wasn't an outside player. So I'm glad the Raiders are moving him back inside to a defensive tackle spot. And believe it or not, it's 6'3", 280. He's actually a better run defender than he is a pass rusher, which is the complete opposite of what you'd think for a guy that's 280 pounds. So he's going to hold up okay in the run game. It's the pass rush that I just don't see. I went back and watched some snaps with him in San Francisco, and the sacks he got were coverage sacks. When he was lined up outside at defensive end, and when he was inside, it was more just his quickness. Like there was a couple where a guard pulled and he replaced, and he beat the down block from the center, so he got in the backfield on play action and got a sack. It wasn't when you see him rush on the interior when the offensive linemen got their hands on him, it was over. There was no counter move. He couldn't get away. He couldn't get any pressure. So Raider fans would think that he's going to slide in and get you 5, 6, 7 sacks is a three technique. That's not Solomon Thomas, but I think that's more of Quentin Jefferson. And Jefferson's not going to get you 6 or 7. He's probably that 4 or 5, but he's going to get you consistent pressure. He had high pressure totals during his time in Seattle and Buffalo, and he's played in this defense before.
Now, if anyone wanted to interact with you on social media, or they could read your threads or your insights, how would they do that?
They can find me on Twitter. The handle is at rholm22, so it's R-H-O-L-M and then the number 22. They can shoot me questions there. Go back and read some posts and some video breakdowns I've done.
Well, one of the best out there, Ryan Holmes. Thank you so much for joining us on the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.